the Shiurim, especially Rabbi Reis is the Manal of the Beis Din of the CRC, of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, and was the previous Manal of the Beis Din of America in New York for many, many years. And besides his graduating Yale Law School, certainly between time in law school and in the Beis Din has a lot of perspectives on Beis Din and our coast. So thank you, Rabbi Reis.
Thank you, Rabbi Orlean. Okay, so the topic today is the prohibition of arkos in halacha. And this is an important din. It comes up a lot because people often have disputes. And if the parties are Jewish, they're not supposed to bring their disputes to secular court. This is an issachomer on a daraita level. And it's one that is not really known about by everybody as well as it should be. Until recently, you didn't really have so many Beis Din options either, or at least it wasn't so meforsum that we still have existing and functioning and vibrant Bati Din rabbinical courts here in this country. Remember when I first started out as the Menahel of the Beis Din of America 24 years ago or so, it was not so popular to go into to resort to the Bati Din. When two Jews had disputes with each other, it was only used in cases where if the parties would go to secular court, they would be thrown into a jail cell because of the criminal nature of the transaction that was being disputed in Beis Din, or if it was the type of case where they would just throw them out because the type of dispute was such that the secular courts would not recognize like an unfair business competition claim when one pizza store would open up across the street from another pizza store. So in America, where you have a general principle of free enterprise, such a claim would not be countenanced in a secular court, so people would go to Beis Din. But otherwise, if it wasn't a type of dispute where they were afraid of being thrown out of the court or being thrown into jail, you didn't have so many people bringing their disputes to Beis Din. One of the jobs that we had when I became a Menahel of the Beis Din of America, now Baruch Hashem, I have the schus to serve as the Beis Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, was to put Beis Din back on the map, to restore a sense of knowledge that there is such an institution, of respect for the Beis Din, and also an understanding of the fact that there's an Issur HaKos, that there's a prohibition of bringing disputes to secular courts. Now, of course, it's easier to steer people away from the secular courts when you have viable Bati Din, viable rabbinical courts. One of the great accomplishments in America over the course of the past 25 years, the past quarter of a century, is that the fact that Bati Din are now very much on the map in a way that they weren't when I started out in the Beis Din world a quarter century ago. Now people utilize Bati Din much more. There's much more of an awareness of the relevance of Choshen Mishpat to our daily lives. There are Choshen Mishpat Kolim in many places, and there are Bati Din. If you opened up a Jewish newspaper 25 years ago, you didn't find too many articles about Bati Din. It was almost like a relic of the past. But you open up a newspaper today, you'll find articles of Bati Din. How would a Beis Din adjudicate such and such case? Sometimes the articles are criticisms. Bati Din are not doing enough. They're not good enough in the way that they function, but at least people are talking about Bati Din. It's on the map. Everyone recognizes that this is a critical part of our community. The starting point of the discussion with respect to the Isser of going to secular courts is the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. These are the ordinances that you're supposed to place in front of them. Who are the them that we're talking about? We're talking about the Jewish judges, that you're supposed to bring your disputes to the Jewish judges. Rashi, Gemara in Gittin, Padah Peches, Amud Beis, says it's a reference to the Shivim Zekedim, Shalu Imo Lahar Kodim Matan Torah, 70 Zekedim that approached Har Sinai before the Torah was given. That's the Lifnehem. Tosa says it's a reference to all of the references, to all of the mentionings of Elohim, Nikva Balabayas Elohim, and so forth in the course of Parshas Mishpatim, that are references to going in front of Jewish law judges, to going in front of Dayanim. So we're told, Elav Abal Michlal Esei, these are the ordinances you're supposed to bring in front of them. Below lifnei of the kochavim mazalos, not in front of Akum. Don't bring your cases in front of the non-Jewish courts. That's what Rashi says in Parshas Mishpatim. It's what the Gemara in Gittin Daf the Peiches Amid Beis says as well. Lifneiem below lifnei of the kochavim. You have to bring your cases in front of the Jewish law judges, not in front of the secular court judges. This is, according to the way it's understood by the Tashbates and Chedek Beisim and Reish Tzadi of his Juvos and other poskim, it's Al-Pipashis, it's an Issa Daraisa. And if it's a Lava Bab Miklal Esei, it has Daraisa origins. There's one opinion in the Makor Baruch who says, Baruch Klein, who's of the opinion that it's only an Issa Darabanan and that the Pasuk is only an Asmachta. Even if you assume that way, an Asmachta teaches us that it's very much Ratzon Hashem. But leaving aside that opinion of it being a Darabanan, the vast majority of poskim hold that it's an Issa Daraisa. It's an Issa Daraisa Chomer. This is Rashi tells us that this is based upon the following considerations. Maybe Dine Yisrael, if Neov de Kochomim Mazals, you bring your case in front of the non Jews. Mechalel es Hashem. It's considered to be a chilul Hashem. You know, the worst type of avera that even Yom Kippur and Yisurin isn't mechaper upon, unless you accept actual death, is chilul Hashem, as the Gemara Yuma says. So you want to stay far away from desecrating God's name. Miyakir shemar elilim lashbichum, and you're actually glorifying the names of the idols and the non-Jewish systems of justice. Tashbates and others point out, doesn't only have to be idol worshippers. Even if you have a country where there is no establishment of religion, like in the United States, there'd still be an Issa Daraisa of going in front of the Arkos, because any acceptance of a foreign system of law other than the Torah is an insult, almost a slap in the face against the Torah that was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore it's a Chilul Hashem. It happens to be one reference in the Sefer Kli Chemda al HaTorah in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, in which there is a bracketed phrase in which he says, "Oh, of course, this only applies to those countries which are in which are far out in the Asian continent, like Japan and China, where they're still worshiping idols, but otherwise, of course, this is not something which is prohibited. It's clear." From the fact that it's a different font, it's bracketed and all that, that was written just for the censors, but any kind of legal system other than the Torah would be subject to this prohibition. The Rambam gives a secondary explanation as to why it is that this is prohibited. That's in Perachot Vav of Hilchos Sanhedrin, Halacha Zayin. The Rambam says, Kol Adon, B'dinei Goyim, Rakol Shalem, Apapisha, Yudinem, G'dinei Yisrael. Anybody who adjudicates a case in front of their court system, hareza rasha, the person is wicked. Ukida, you don't want to be wicked. Ukida chire behavim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, and it says if the person has blasphemed, and says the Rambam, it's considered behavim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. The person has lifted up their hand against the Torah. They have repudiated the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. So it is also on the one hand, because it glorifies a system other than Torah, and it's also on the other hand, because it is a repudiation of the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, this prohibition is relevant to any kind of dispute, any kind of adjudication. The Kesef HaKodshim and Simen Chof Vav of Chol Shem Mishpat says whenever there's a decision that needs to be made, so that's when you're giving glory to the non-Jewish court system, if they need to make a decision. If it's not a decision that's being made between two Jews, but it's just a bureaucratic or administrative thing that you have to file for a marriage license, or you have a childless couple that needs to go to the courts in order to get the paperwork to adopt a child, something like that, where there's no judgment that needs to be rendered in a dispute between two Jews. So that's not included in the prohibition. The Chasam Sofer has a case in the Simon Gimel of his Shailos Tshuva Shredach Hoshem Mishpat, where somebody would want in the future to bring a claim, even in Besdin, against the orphans that are too young for him to be able to register the claim right now, but he has eidus, he has testimony that he wants to be able to register. People are prepared to render a testimony. He wants to be able to put it on record so he could use it at a later point in time in case the individuals are not going to be available or anything like that. And there's a court service. The court provides a service that you can record things in the court to make it part of an official record that could be utilized afterwards. It's not a dispute that's going to be adjudicated by the courts. It'll be adjudicated, God willing, by the Besdin. The person's not looking to violate this issa. They just want to avail themselves of this service that they're going to be able to record the testimony in the annals of the court system. So are they allowed to do that? Says the Ksam Sofer, yeah, that's permitted because that's not an adversarial proceeding. That's just taking advantage of a service that they're providing. That would be okay. You're allowed to utilize the court system in a way that they're going to be of help and assistance to us to be able to adjudicate our cases. It's like the mitzvah of setting up a court system. That is a mitzvah, says they. That's in Parsha Shoftim, where the Torah tells us, Shoftim, Mishoftim, Titen Lecha B'chol Sherecha. You have to establish the Shoftim. You have to establish the Jewish law judges, but you also have to establish the Shoterim, the enforcers, the policemen, the ones who are going to enforce the decisions of the Besdin. The Medrash Tanhuma famously says, Imein Shoter Ein Shofet. You don't have enforcers, then you don't really have a viable court system. So you can utilize the secular court system, says the Chassam Sofer, for purposes of enforcing our jurisdiction. You're going to utilize their services. We'll be able to enforce our decisions better. We'll be able to implement our cases better. We'll have what we need. We'll have all of the utensils that we need. Some of the poskim speak about, can you utilize the civil courts in order to conduct discovery? So just conducting discovery itself, if they have resources that you can use in order to send out subpoenas and requests for document deliveries and the like, and in order to produce what you need to have to argue your case in front of the Besdin, as long as you make it clear that you're not summoning the other party for an adjudication in front of the secular court, even that could potentially be permissible. Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin has in one of his tshuvos at the end of his tshuva collection, various short letters, there's a tshuva in which he says if you just issue a summons for secular court, so maybe that's not considered to be a violation yet if there hasn't been substantial court involvement. So what does that mean? You just issue a summons, that sounds like it's also going to be problematic. Isn't that also going to the secular courts? So presumably, it's a difficult tshuva, but presumably what it means is that you're just reserving rights. Maybe the other party will refuse to come to Besdin altogether, or maybe there's certain rights, like the Ksam Sofer says, you can register certain things in secular court that you'll be able to utilize in Besdin. You'll be able to maybe get send a discovery request in secular court that the Besdin is not empowered to be able to enforce. So you take advantage of that as long as you make clear that you're not going to adjudicate the underlying case in Besdin. All of that could potentially be permissible. There used to be a journal called Divrei Mishpat of various Besdin-related articles. It came out about a quarter century ago, lasted for 2 or 3 years. Now there are plenty of us. We don't lack for Torah journals, Baruch Hashem. But it was a very good Torah journal at the time, a number of Dayanim, of Chaim Kohn, and of Shmuel Leib Landesman, and who used to contribute to this journal. It only lasted for a few years, but it's very worthwhile. You go to the Besdin of America, right? You work there now, I think. You go to the Besdin of America, and you ask to see copies of this journal. You can find it in their bookcases, so they have some very good articles there about Besdin jurisdiction in general. So one of the articles is by Ben Sion Vosner, who's the son of the late Shmuel Vosner Zatzal. Ben Sion Vosner writes that if you're going to threaten to summon somebody to Besdin, Kavachoma, you actually summon somebody to Besdin for purposes of getting them to capitulate to some type of a settlement, to give in on your claim because they're afraid of the adjudication that's going to take place in front of civil court. So that would be prohibited. There you are using the authority of the civil court, so that is being miyakir shem alilim. You're giving credence and glory to the secular court system in order to be able to get something out of it, to get a settlement out of it. So that would not be permitted. And he's medayik a little bit. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch seems to enunciate two potential prohibitions. Since the beginning of Simen Chavav, the Chavar says, Asa lodum ifnei dayanei akum. You're not allowed to adjudicate your case in front of the non-Jewish judges, but then you go back down a few lines later, he uses a different lashon, And anybody who comes to adjudicate in front of them is a Rasha. So he says, well, why do we have this double Lashon? Asa Ladun and Chol Haba Lidon. Why don't you just say Asa Ladun v'chol Hadon b'fneihem areisa Rasha? What do you mean v'chol Haba Lidon? It's an extra word. So he's medayik on this extra word that even if it doesn't come to adjudication, but you're just utilizing the potential for adjudication in order to have some leverage, gain an upper hand against the other party, so that also is prohibited. So therefore, I think that you have to qualify the statement made by Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin in this fashion, that he's not talking about threatening to adjudicate the case in a civil court. It's some other formality that's being performed. Like, for example, sometimes we'll tell a party that, let's say that there's a secular court statute of limitations where there's a certain claim a person has. If they don't bring it within 5-6 years, whatever it is, it's a breach of contract claim, it's a tort claim, sometimes you only have 1 year to bring the claim, they're going to lose the ability to bring the claim afterwards. So really, they should bring their claim in Besdin no matter what, they're not in secular court. But the thing is, what happens if they try to bring the claim in Besdin and then the other party refuses to go to Besdin? As we'll see, then there's the possibility of a heterokos. Then the Besdin can give permission to bring the case in secular court. What right would you have to violate a Torah prohibition just because the other party isn't compliant? You could just violate, what are you going to say? Tell people you could eat pork because the other person isn't being compliant. So what do you mean? You can authorize the case to be brought in secular court. Two different explanations as to what is the basis, the conceptual theory behind it being able to issue a heterokos. There's the explanation. It's based on a Gemara, Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi base. So it does, but clearly there is a precedent for it in halacha, but what's the reason for it? What could be the explanation? So the Chassam Sofer, characteristically, in the very same tshuva, says it's because here the secular court becomes an arm and an agent of the Besdin. The Besdin isn't able to adjudicate the case because the defendant refuses to submit to the jurisdiction of the Besdin, so then the Besdin empowers the secular court to hear the case, and then that's not considered to be a derogation of the obligation to go in front of a Besdin. It's not considered to be a disparagement of the Torah because it's the Besdin that's running the show. The plaintiff went to the Besdin. The Besdin's just saying, since we don't have the authority to adjudicate the case, since the defendant's not submitting to our jurisdiction, so then we're authorizing the secular court to take over and to administer it on our behalf. The other approach is that of the Kli Chemda, who says that it's based really on the principle that if there is no Besdin available to adjudicate the case, there's no prohibition, because then we revert to the principle that we find in the Gemara and Baba Kama, which is Abedina Lenafshe, that a person has the ability to adjudicate a case on their own if there's no other easy recourse. So normally we say there's a Truma Sedeshin, that even though Avid Inish, Adina Lenapshe, even though a person can adjudicate a case on their own, citizen's arrest, whatever, you just self-help remedy is more, I guess, the appropriate analog. It's a self-help remedy is something which is permitted according to Jewish law. It's mechur adaver. You're not allowed to administer self-help by going to the secular courts. If there's a Besdin available to adjudicate the case, you can't go to the secular courts. But, says the Kli Chemda, there's no Besdin available to adjudicate the case because the other party's refusing to submit to the jurisdiction of Besdin, so that would provide the heter under those circumstances. According to the Chassam Sofer, it's just serving really as an arm of the Besdin, the same way that when the civil court enforces the decision of the Besdin, it's serving as an arm of the Besdin under those circumstances. One other exception to the notion of requiring the parties to go exclusively to a civil court would be if it's not a dispute between two parties. What would be a case that's not a dispute between the two parties? A criminal case. Criminal case, the plaintiff in the case is not the party that was harmed per se. Let's say that you murdered, that somebody committed a murder. So is it the family of the victim that's the plaintiff? It's not the family of the victim that's the plaintiff. It's the government that's the plaintiff. The government has an interest in preserving law and order. You look in the Devar Avraham, The Dvar Avam in his very first teshuva, in his very first chelek, talks about the parameters of the principle of dina de mahusa dina. And he says one of the parameters is that a government has a responsibility and a right to preserve law and order. That's where the authority comes from with respect to the bati din of makin ve'onshin shalom min adin. When the Bez Din is an arm of the government, whether in Eretz Yisrael or in those places in Europe, where the Bez Din was given the authority not only to adjudicate monetary cases, but also to administer law and order. Very often the government said, we don't want to administer the law and order in the Jewish communities, in the shtetls, whatever, let the Jews do it. And they would give that authority to the Jewish community. So when the Bez Din was given that authority, so says the Dvar Avam, the Kavnah Rav, that this was based, that's when you had an application of the principle of Makin Ve'onshin Shalom Min Hadin, that Bez Din, in order to preserve law and order, they could sometimes even enforce extrajudicial remedies that were not, strictly speaking, authorized according to Torah law, either based on procedural or substantive grounds, in order to maintain law and order, because they were fulfilling a governmental function. Here, the government doesn't give us that type of authority. When the Rush moved from France to Spain, he settled into Toledo. He was shocked to discover, he wasn't used to this type of authority. He was shocked to discover that the local Jewish community was putting people to death. He said, "What, the Sanhedrin was exiled from Lashkos HaGozes. We don't have the authority to put people to death anymore." But then he realized that it was an application of Makim Elchin Shalom Min Adin, that the community was given the authority to administer criminal justice, and then that would become part of the authority of the Bez Din. But when Bez Din is not given that type of jurisdiction by the government, we're certainly not given that jurisdiction. Some rabbis who discovered this a few years ago, because there was a divorce case, it was a sting operation, it was a strange situation, that there was a divorce case. It turned out the whole case was made up by the government, because it was a sting operation where some rabbis thought that they needed to pressure a husband into giving his wife a get. Somehow these rabbis were under the impression that the circumstances of the case, as they understood it, would allow them to beat up the husband and administer cattle prods and whatever else. I'm not sure what the halakhic justification was for them to do that, that this case would fall under the category of kofenoso b'shotim. I'm not sure. But they did it anyway. And they discovered that even though, according to their interpretation of Jewish law, this was a case where they were entitled to administer at least corporal punishment, to administer physical beating of the husband in question, the government didn't feel that they had that jurisdiction, and they went to jail. So they were sent to jail. I remember Rabbi Shmuel first, Shlita, came to one of our conferences in Chicago. We put together a Masadri Gittin conference. We gathered together rabbis from all over North America to discuss standards and protocols when it came to Gittin. We have this conference almost on an annual basis. We haven't had it since COVID, but you know, we try to have it as often as possible each year. He declared his unequivocal support for the Bez Din of America prenuptial agreement, that husbands and wives should sign when they get married, that the husband undertakes a certain financial obligation in the event that the couple ever becomes separated and agrees that he will submit to the jurisdiction of the Bez Din to adjudicate any disputes regarding his financial obligation and regarding his obligation to give a get if the wife ever requests a get. And not everybody had been so supportive of this prenuptial agreement because they were worried about is it considered to be coercion, there's a monetary obligation. It's a separate discussion. We don't hold that it's coercion because the monetary obligation is based on a reasonable amount of support. So it's not a penalty obligation. It's a support obligation that simply never becomes waived, which according to the Baal Nesivas HaMishpah and his Sefer Ketores Gittin is perfectly acceptable to do, etc. But in any event, Rabbi First came in And he said that from now on, he's going to encourage everybody to sign the prenuptial agreement in the Aguda community. Why is that? Because he said we can no longer beat up the husbands. He said because now if you beat up the husbands, they're going to send the rabbis to jail. So therefore we see that we have to come up with something else. So therefore now I'm endorsing the prenuptial agreement. So you don't have the ability to beat people up. That's not any type of criminal justice. Has to be administered by the criminal authorities. That's why Rav Yashiv wrote, this is published in the Kobetz HaTshuvos, if you know that somebody is a child molester, you know, we're not getting into all the questions of what if you don't know, you're just suspicious, or what's the standard for knowing? He says, let's assume that you know. The community knows that somebody is a child molester, so then he says it's absolutely appropriate to hand over the person to the criminal authorities because of Tikkun HaOlam. Because this is not a role. We don't have the ability to punish child molesters, people who are engaged in criminal behavior. We don't have the ability in the Beis Din to punish such individuals. So therefore, that's the type of thing that has to go straight to the secular court system, to the criminal court system, because that's not included in the jurisdiction or the authority of the Beis Din, or what's prohibited. And the main reason it's not prohibited is because it's a governmental function. It's the government versus the criminals who are really the litigants in the case, and it's not Reuven versus Shimon, and therefore that falls out of the ambit of this prohibition. Question also arises: what about declaring bankruptcy? If a person wants to declare bankruptcy, is that a violation of going to secular court? So Rabbi Bleich writes about this. Others write about this. It's a very good article by my colleague in Chicago, Rabbi Dr. Stephen Reznikoff, on this issue, in which the authority of Shechter gave a very nice issue a number of years ago on this issue, explaining that filing for bankruptcy is not a violation of going to the Arkos, because, again, it's not a dispute that one person is litigating against another person. The person is simply availing themselves of a service that the secular courts provide to protect somebody who is in bankruptcy status, somebody who's having trouble collecting their debts. It's a societal enactment for the sake of enabling a better and smoother running of the economy, that people in this type of dire situation be able to avail themselves of bankruptcy relief. And since it's not a litigation of one party versus another party, So therefore, simply declaring bankruptcy and getting bankruptcy relief in secular court would be permissible. It becomes complicated when there actually is a litigation in the context of bankruptcy. Let's say that there's a creditor who's owed money by the bankruptcy debtor and wants the money to be paid to them. So are they allowed to bring the case in the bankruptcy court as opposed to the Beis Din? One of the problems of bringing the case in front of the Beis Din is that the creditor is probably not allowed, according to secular law, to pursue the debtor in any kind of a judicial forum, because the debtor receives an automatic stay. The debtor generally gets a protection given to them by the bankruptcy court, which stays any proceedings against the debtor, meaning creditors are not allowed to harass or pursue the debtor for payment of their debts in any forum outside of the bankruptcy court and the bankruptcy court trustee. So there was a case, actually, it was the Berkat Yosef case. It was a New York court case where the Beis Din issued a seiruf against a debtor who was in bankruptcy for refusing to submit to Beis Din when some of the creditors brought the debtor to the bankruptcy court. And the court ruled that it was improper. They got angry at the Beis Din. They ruled that it was improper for the Beis Din to issue a contempt order because that was a violation of the automatic stay. And they penalized, I don't think they penalized the Beis Din per se, but they penalized the plaintiffs for putting the debtor in this situation where a contempt order was actually issued against the debtor to pressure the debtor when there was an automatic stay. So in this type of situation, and also, probably be okay to go to the secular court simply because, generally speaking, you'd be filing against the bankruptcy trustee. The trustee will usually not be the Jewish party, it's just the person who's organizing all of the various affairs of the debtor. And also, since there are many creditors involved, arguably speaking, so since if the majority of the creditors are non-Jewish, so you have to kind of just get in line and you have to follow whatever is the process which is outlined by the secular court. It becomes a secular court proceeding by virtue of the fact that the non-Jews are not obligated to go to Beis Din, cannot be expected to go to Beis Din, and therefore you stand in line. If it will be a direct type of court action against the debtor, and you're just bringing in a secular court because you have no other option and you don't have this justification for whatever reason that it's against the trustee or that you're just joining an action when the majority of the parties, the necessary parties, are not Jewish, so then it seems that it would be appropriate to first get leave of the Beis Din, to get what we call Rishus Beis Din, to get permission from the rabbinical court before bringing any type of action, even in the course of a bankruptcy against the bankruptcy debtor. That wouldn't be a violation of the automatic stay, just to get permission from the Beis Din to pursue the matter in secular court. That would probably be appropriate under these circumstances. But otherwise, we say that the prohibition, when it does exist, when you do have two Jewish litigants and there is a prohibition to go to Beis Din, it's an actual ritual prohibition. What I mean by that, we have monetary laws that are waivable. Like, for example, the fact that a shoah l'skaya ba'onsin, or that a shomer chinam is skaya b'pshia, that a shomer sachar is skaya b'gneva v'aveda. So those are monetary laws. But the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Gemara, and Baba Metzia say that if you want to waive those laws and change it around, that the person who's lending an object says to the borrower, I'm not going to be mechayev you ba'onsin. Shomer Chinam agrees to be Chayev Bigneva Baveda. Somebody who's entrusting an item to a Shomer Sachar says, I'm going to pater you from Gneva Baveda. So if you're going to either relax certain obligations or a person will take additional obligations upon themselves in a monetary financial context, perfectly fine. Essentially because we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, the Kotan Aishiva Mamon Kayim, the Gemara Ksuvas, Daf Nun Vav, and elsewhere, Rabbi Yehuda says that any monetary condition is considered to be perfectly binding. However, here it's not just considered to be a monetary obligation, that when you have monetary disputes against somebody, you're obligated to go to secular, obligated to go to Beis Din, and obligated not to go to secular court. That's an Issa Gomer, says the Ramban in his Perush Al HaTorah, that's also in the materials, page 6. He says that even if both parties would agree, and this is how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Chav Vav, Choshe Mishpat, even if both parties would agree that they're going to adjudicate the case in secular court, said, we waive it, we waive our right to insist on Beis Din. No, because of the fact that you're Mechayev and Megadev, because it's a Chilul Hashem and it's a Haram Asyad, Neged Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore this is not waivable. This is something which cannot be waived by the parties. If it would be waived, then any waiver is going to be null and null and void. So therefore, it's not going to be chal at all. There's a Shuvah Sarash who says, let's say the people entered into a contract, and the contract said, and this is in Klal Samaches Simen Yud Gimel. Let's say that the contract said that the parties agree that if they have any kind of dispute, it will be brought in secular court as opposed to Beis Din. So he said, we have to reinterpret the clause. We assume that we're not dealing with Rishi Askinan, that we're not dealing with Rishayim. So when they entered into that clause, we're going to assume that they meant something that would be permissible according to Halacha. What could they possibly have meant that would be permissible according to Halacha? So he says, it must be that they meant that if one of the parties is going to be stubborn, one of the parties is going to act like an olam, he's going to be like a strong man, a gangster, and refuse to come to Beis Din, so then the other party will have the right to bring the case to secular court, which is the halacha anyway. The Yam Shel Shlomo gives sort of a nafkamina in terms of what difference does it make if you write that in the shtar, as opposed to if you didn't write that in the shtar. As we mentioned earlier, that's the halacha, that if you sub in somebody to come to Beis Din and they refuse to come, so Beis Din will generally give Rishus, they'll give a Rishus Beis Din, they'll give a Heter Arkos, permission to pursue the case in civil court. So what do you gain from the fact that you wrote in the Shtar? So it says the Yam Shel Shlomo, I find this very interesting. The Yam Shel Shlomo says that in this case, if it's written in the Shtar, you don't even have to go to the Beis Din. You don't have to ask the Beis Din for Rishus, because it's already the fact that the other party insisted on putting this in the shtar means that the other party is not planning to go to Beis Din. So therefore, the other party insisted on putting this condition in the shtar that it's going to be adjudicated in civil court. So that tells you that if they you try to take them, you should still try to take them to Beis Din because the clause is null and void. But if you see that they're refusing to come to Beis Din, so you can go straight to court because you have a general assumption based on the contractual clause that they're not going to come to civil court. So I get this question sometimes. I have people who are very conscientious Jewish businessmen, lawyers, and the like. So they'll call me up, businesswomen and lawyers. So they call me up and they ask, I'm entering into a contract with another Jewish party, or I'm a lawyer on a transaction, we're entering into a contract with another Jewish party, and every single contract has a choice of law provision and a choice of forum provision. Choice of law provision says that the contract will be governed by principles of, let's say, New York law. We'll get to that in a second. Choice of forum condition says that in the event that there's a dispute, that then the case will be adjudicated in the state and federal courts of New York. So can I allow for the insertion of this clause? I want to put in, my client wants to put in a clause that the case will be adjudicated in Beis Din. But the other party insists that they're only going to adjudicate, that they will refuse to sign the contract unless the contract says that any dispute will be adjudicated in civil court. Am I allowed to enter into the contract or do we have to walk away from the deal? What are the stakes? So when it comes to, for example, a ribis transaction where the Torah says, Lo sisimun alav neshach, that even shuma is also, even a contractual stipulation that you're going to enter into a ribis transaction is forbidden, even if you never intend to collect the interest. I get the shaila a lot with respect to imputed interest, because sometimes if you enter into an interest-free loan transaction with somebody, so the government will impute a certain amount of interest, it'll be a higher rate than what you might imagine is otherwise reasonable, and you'll have to pay income on that imputed interest rate. But if you put in a tiny little bit of interest that's much lower than the imputed rate, so then you won't get taxed except for a tiny little bit. So what parties sometimes ask is if it is permissible for them to enter into a promissory note, well, they'll write a nominal amount of interest and they'll never intend to collect it in order to avoid this taxation issue, or is that a problem of losa simun alav neshach? So I generally assume, and Rabbi Williger does as well, that this is a problem because of the prohibition losa simun alav neshach. It gives you the right to collect the money. You have a stipulated, you're going to collect an interest amount, so you'll have to put in, if you're going to put in some sort of an amount like that in order to avoid the tax problem, you'll have to enter into a heter iska. You'll have to convert the transaction from a loan transaction into a joint venture transaction in order to avert the prohibited interest issue, but you're not allowed to put in the contract that you're going to collect any kind of interest, even if you don't intend to collect it. However, based on this tshuva by the Rosh, based on the comments of the Yam Shel Shlomo, it would seem that if the other party in a business transaction, you have another Jewish party, and they're insisting on putting in the choice of law provision, that it's only a choice of forum provision, that the case is only going to be adjudicated in front of the federal and state courts, that you would be allowed to agree to that provision because they're insisting upon it. And then, when push comes to shove down the road, you can assume that they're going to refuse to come to Beis Din because they insisted on inserting that clause. And there's an implied permission that you could take them to court, not because you have the right to go to court, but because you know that they're going to refuse to go to Beis Din. So that would be a possible application of this particular principle in terms of what does it accomplish when you put this in the shtar. But of course, if you have any inkling whatsoever that the other person might be willing to go to Beis Din down the road, even though this clause was put in the contract, so you should first try to get them to go to Beis Din. There's a little bit of a discussion about that. The Kesef Kedoshim speaks about what if the other person is so incredibly divorced from observance that you know that they're a mumar, they're somebody who is a violator of every mitzvah in the Torah, and you know that they're not going to come to civil court. You even have to bother summoning them, that you know that they're not going to want to come to Beis Din. Do you need to even bother to summon them to come to Beis Din in the first place? The Kesef HaKadoshim assumes that don't bother if you know that they're not going to come. So then it's implied that you can take them to secular court because they're going to refuse to come to Beis Din. But many contemporary writers, including Rabbi Bleich, write that this you can't really rely upon that bismanazet, because one of the things that I've noticed over the past quarter century that I've been involved in Beis Din is that one of the reasons why there is more of a proliferation in popularity of people utilizing Beis Din is because there, in general, has been more of a surge of what we call alternative dispute resolution, ADR, of people taking advantage of other ways of resolving disputes other than going to the regular courts. Part of it is based on frumkeit. The people are more frum and they recognize they're not supposed to go to secular court. But part of it is also because there's a general preference for ADR. The court systems are very backed up. They're very backlogged. They're not always the most efficient. They're extremely expensive. And people look for alternative ways to be able to resolve their disputes. If there's any kind of decent arbitration alternative where you just go in front of an arbitration court, meaning, you know, it could be a Beis Din that decides cases according to Jewish law, and it's enforceable because the parties signed an arbitration agreement, and according to arbitration law, then the courts will respect the judgment of the Beis Din, and they'll even enforce it, as we mentioned earlier. It could be an organization like the American Arbitration Association that resolves disputes through arbitration. So people are often much more comfortable going the route of arbitration rather than utilizing the regular secular courts, even if they have nothing to do with frumkeit, even if they have nothing to do with Judaism. So certainly if they are Jewish and there is this possibility that they would be happy to take advantage of an alternative forum for resolving disputes, so it still pays to send them a summons to invite them to come to Beis Din. Because you never know, there is a possibility that they will agree to come to Beis Din. So even if they are completely non-observant, so therefore you can't rely upon that dispensation of the Kesef Hakadoshim. The Yam Shel Shlomo, by the way, is found in Baba Kamach Perakres Simen Samech. I don't think that it's in the materials. Now another consideration, and this is, you know, something which the poskim discuss, and there are different, you know, views about this, is what if the Beis Din does not have the jurisdiction, according to secular law, to issue an enforceable decision? What do I mean by that? That there are certain areas of law, that, let's say outside of the criminal realm. The criminal realm, we say, okay, that's you don't really have the two parties of the case, and not really Reuven versus Shimon, it's the government versus Reuven or Shimon. But let's say that you do have a case of Reuven versus Shimon, but it's a type of case where the government says, based on public policy concerns, we reserve the right to have ultimate jurisdiction when it comes to this type of dispute. We're not ceding our jurisdiction to any kind of to a rabbinical court or to any other kind of arbitration court. Like, for example, in many states, including New York, let's say you have a couple that gets divorced. So a divorcing couple can submit their various disputes in front of a Beis Din. And in fact, they should, rather than to submit it in front of a secular court, if they need to litigate their various disagreements and differences. So they can argue in front of the Beis Din how to divide the marital assets, how much spousal support should be paid, how much child support should be paid. All of these things can be litigated in front of the Beis Din. However, when it comes to the custody arrangements for children, so at least in the courts in New York, they invoke the parens patriae principle. What is the parens patriae principle? Otherwise, the other, you know, than being a good alliteration, the parens patriae principle is that the courts are considered to be the guardians of the children. That they say that we're not giving up our jurisdiction of being the guardians of the children to any other entity, and therefore, even if the parties sign an arbitration agreement, that they're going to let some arbitration court like a Beis Din decide the custody arrangements. If one party doesn't like the decision, then they can relitigate the whole thing in front of the court, because ultimately, if both parties sign on the dotted line, fine, that's a marital agreement that would generally be respected by the courts. But otherwise, the courts are concerned about the best interests of the children, and they feel that that can't be something that will be given away definitively to another adjudicative or judicial body other than the courts. So does that mean that the Beis Din will not hear child custody cases altogether? So here, since it is an iser, it is an actual prohibition to litigate cases between one party and another party in civil court as opposed to Beis Din. So the position that we take at the Beis Din of America, that many posts can take, is that no, the Jewish parties are expected to comply with Jewish law. Even though we may not be able to enforce the decision, we can certainly issue a seiruv. We can issue a contempt order against somebody who will refuse to submit or abide by a decision that would be issued by the Beis Din. when it comes to custody matters, because that is something that should be submitted in front of the Beis Din. What's very interesting is that here in New York, when there have been custody disputes that were heard by the Beis Din, so the Beis Din has always appointed very competent dayanim who are familiar with sort of the best interests of the children sensitivities. And that standard, which happens to be the standard according to halacha, it's not in contradiction to the standard under secular law. We also look out for the best interests of the children, although for us, best interests of the children will also take into account religious upbringing considerations as well, obviously. But we also have child therapists who look at what's going to be healthiest for the children in terms of the parental responsibilities. We generally will have the doctor. We have a competent therapist that will sit on the case, either Dr. David Pelkovitz, who often sits on these cases at the Beis Din of America, or some other therapist who's recommended by Dr. David Pelkovitz. Those are our two preferred standards. And they will issue a thoughtful and well-reasoned decision regarding the custody of the children that's so thorough and so professional that no secular court would do a better job anyway. So generally the parties have lawyers, and the lawyers engage in what we might call a collaborative arbitration with the Beis Din, in which they agree that essentially whatever decision is going to be issued by the Beis Din is going to be respected by them, because they respect the process, and they know that they're not going to get a better process when it comes to the secular court system. So after the Beis Din issues its final decision, the lawyers generally, and we do this in Chicago as well, the lawyers generally will take that decision and they will memorialize it in the form of a divorce settlement agreement, what we call a marital settlement agreement in Chicago, and a parental allocation judgment agreement, and they will sign on the dotted line. So therefore, there's no reason why Beis Din can't preside over these cases as well. You just have to have a very good system in place so that parties will gain a comfort level of adjudicating these matters in Beis Din. It's very interesting because the one area that I would say in which there's been the most growth over the past few years, at least that I've noticed in the Chicago Rabbinical Council, in terms of cases that parties bring to Beis Din, is in this area. The more and more you have parties bringing all aspects of their divorce disputes, including custody and visitation disputes, to the Beis Din, because the court system is so incredibly backlogged and so incredibly congested and expensive and contentious as well. And the Beis Din, we're generally more available. We're generally much more reasonable in terms of what we charge. And also we tend to make the proceeding more harmonious in the way that we conduct our proceedings. It's less adversarial, and therefore this has been a growing area of practice. We had one case in the Beis Din of America a number of years ago, which was a New Jersey case, and the parties were arguing and fighting over temporary interim visitation arrangements as they were finalizing their divorce, and the Beis Din was issuing decision after decision, and finally at one point in time, the husband didn't like the decisions that were being handed down by the Beis Din in terms of the visitation arrangements. So he said, you don't really have jurisdiction anyway. It doesn't matter that I signed on the dotted line. This is parens patriae. It's ultimately in the hands of the courts, and I want to remove it from Beis Din and bring it to the court. So he went and he filed a petition in front of the New Jersey court. The New Jersey court, which of course was very backlogged and beleaguered at the time, looked at the content of the decisions and the reasoning behind the decisions that were handed down by the Beis Din, the professionals and the therapists that were being used by the Beis Din, and said the Beis Din is doing a very fine job. Why should we take this jurisdiction away from the Beis Din? They sent the matter back to the Beis Din. The only problem was that the official law in the books in New Jersey, according to prior court decisions, was that arbitration courts don't actually have jurisdiction. So therefore, a couple of weeks later, the Supreme Court of New Jersey issued a decision, which is the Forzi versus Forzi decision, which says, henceforth, arbitration tribunals will have jurisdiction to adjudicate custody and visitation disputes in the state of New Jersey. And that's been the law on the books ever since then, as long as they follow the best interests of the child standard. So I think that we were able to accomplish something good. It could be that the timing of the decision was coincidental, but I'm not so sure. So the other consideration is that let's say you did not have a Beis Din that was qualified. There's no Bezdin Shebeir that's qualified to hear disputes. So do you have the right to say, well, there's no qualified Bezdin, so therefore I'm going to bring the matter to civil court? So this was a question that was posed to the Rashba. The Rashba in his Tshuvos speaks about this and comes to the conclusion that this is the case which is really spoken about at the beginning of Perek Zeh Borer of our Kol Shebesuria. What's our Kol Shebesuria? Our Kol Shebesuria were basically not real arkos, not real secular courts, but they were dayonim that weren't necessarily so well-versed, but they were in a municipality, they were in a jurisdiction where you didn't have a competent bezdin, you didn't have a fully qualified bezdin to be able to hear cases. So then you're supposed to appoint individuals who are just good, straight-thinking, common-sense-oriented, fair-minded individuals who will be in charge of hearing and adjudicating cases in that jurisdiction, as long as everybody is comfortable. This is the Shaila Tshuvos L'Rashba, Chelek Bei Simen Reisha Tzadi. As long as they are the residents of the city have settled on these individuals as fair-minded individuals. And he says they're not going to be able to decide the case according to strict Torah law, because they don't know strict Torah law, so they're going to just be people who will decide according to principles of common sense. So that's not going to be a violation of the prohibition of Arkos. Why not? Because number one, you're not going to the secular courts, so there's no miyakir shem alilim. Number two, they're not deciding according to principles of a foreign legal system, so it's not maybe miyad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. They're just deciding according to their own common sense. They would have had to at least attend Yeshiva University, because the Rashba requires they be people who are Yirei Elokim Sone Batsa Ba'anshe Mebine Mada. They need to know Mada. If they don't know Torah, at least they Mada. So therefore, that would be considered to be acceptable, but it's not only acceptable, but it's also absolutely mandatory, says the Rashba, rather than violating this prohibition of going into a secular court. Another interesting scenario is that we know there were complicated and very lumdish sugyos in the Gemara, in Sanhedrin, and Baba Kama, in the end of Gittin, which deal with the parameters of Shlichus Ayoko of Dinan. What is the jurisdiction of Bezdin and Bizman Azed, that we are not direct smuchin, we're not direct heirs of the smicha that was given and bestowed by Moshe Rabbeinu? So therefore, we don't have the same samchut, we don't have the same jurisdiction of the Dayanim of yesteryear. We can't be done knossos. We can't adjudicate the penalty types of matters like the payment of kepel whenever there's a theft and things of that variety. So says the Gemara, Bezdin only has jurisdiction mimusta de shchiach of isbei chisar and kis. Matters that are common types of disputes, it could be inheritance matters, loan disputes, things like that. And there's chisar and kis, and there's a loss of money involved. But if it doesn't satisfy both of those criteria, so we don't say shlichus ayoka of dinan. So then what happens if you have, like, for example, you have somebody who is attacked by an animal? So we say, okay, that's not considered to be so shliach. So therefore, that's not included within the jurisdiction of Bezdin. But cases of boshes, of embarrassment, not included in the jurisdiction of the Bezdin. So what happens if somebody wants to bring a claim of this sort in front of the Bezdin? Can the other party say, no, there's no shlichus ayoka of dinan, you have to take me to secular court, or vice versa? A plaintiff wants to take the defendant to secular court as opposed to Bezdin, and the defendant says, no, you're obligated to take me to Bezdin. We had a case like that. Bezdin of America, it was somebody who's a child who was riding a bicycle in a bungalow colony that was owned by some Jewish fellow. And there was a big pothole that hadn't been fixed, and the child went into the pothole and got hurt through falling into the pothole. It was Niske Bor. So the father of the child brought a din Torah against the owner of the bungalow colony. He wants to collect Niske Bor, the father of the child brought a secular court case that he wanted to collect. So the defendant, who is the owner of the bungalow colony, said, oh, wait a second, you have to take me to Bezdin. You can't take me to secular court. So the plaintiff brought in a toin, a rabbinical court advocate, The Torin wrote this whole big tshuva to our Bezdin saying, no, according to the Shach, Niske Bor are not considered to be Shliach, it's not considered to be within Shlichusayo, even though the Shvus Yaakov, quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, disagrees with the Shach. We say Kimli, ooh, we threw in a Kimli as well. Kimli, like the Shach, we all like the Shach, it's not included in Shlichusayo. That's why we want to go to secular court. They said also they want to be able to collect against the insurance carrier. But so the defendant said, the owner of the bungalow colony said, well, you think I carry insurance? He didn't carry any insurance. He said, no, that's a question. If there is, normally, if you have a tort case, and one person is covered by insurance, so we say that the insurance carrier is considered to be the real party in interest. So it would be permissible to go against the insurance carrier in civil court, even though the named defendant is the person who's covered by the insurance, but really you're going after the insurance carrier. That would be okay for a plaintiff to go after the insurance, but here there was no insurance. So I pointed out to this Tohen that there is a Sefer Trumos that's quoted by the Beis Yosef in Simen Chava, where the Sefer Trumos says that in the event that you do have a type of case that's not covered by Shlichusayu, that doesn't give you the right to commit an Isser HaKos. The Lashon of the Sefer HaTrumos, this is on page 46 of the materials. Afili dinei chavolos, even cases of assault, she'enem misurim lanem bizman hazeh, that would not be included according to some authorities within Shlichusayo, asalim sobidei goyim. You're not allowed to bring those cases in front of the non-Jews. So what do you have to do? You have to go in front of the Bezin. Komakom apakapit she'en donen dine knosses b'bobo yeshul doyonim. La'ano shalikknos odnum kapit sarak shaitim l'nadosam mishonim v'shileishu. So the Bezin simply has to use a certain degree of extrajudicial authority to say that they're going to put somebody in chayrim until they appease the other party or some other, you know, version where they kind of indirectly are able to adjudicate those cases that can't be adjudicated directly by Bezin. The smak says that in certain cases, you have the right, the Bezdin would have the right even to direct that the matter be brought in front of the secular court by the plaintiff when it feels that it's not able to adjudicate even in an indirect fashion. But ultimately, that has to be the determination of the Bezdin. In the first instance, the matter must be brought in front of the Bezdin. What if you're on the receiving end of this stick, meaning that you're the defendant? So in the event that you are the defendant, so Ravadi Yosef in his Tshuvas Yechavidas talks about this in the context of a lawyer, that let's say you're a lawyer that represents a Jewish defendant, and the Jewish defendant is summoned by another Jew to secular court. So then he says that you're an anus. In that case, it's similar to when you're a plaintiff and you summon the defendant to come to secular court and he refuses, Bezdin will give you permission to go to defendant to come to Bezdin and he refuses, so the Bezdin will give the plaintiff permission to pursue the defendant in civil court. So by the same token, it's quite clear that if a Jewish plaintiff summons you to civil court, then it's quite obvious that the Jewish plaintiff is refusing to go to Bezdin and is going to secular court instead. Moshe Sternbach says that if the Jewish plaintiff is religious, so you have to at least remind him of his obligation to go to Bezdin and summon him to Bezdin before continuing the matter in secular court. But most say no. If it's quite clear that if he summoned you to secular court, so then you have the right to defend yourself in secular court. So Rabbi Yosef says that if you're a lawyer, you're not allowed to represent one Jewish party to bring a claim against another Jewish party in civil court. But if you're representing a defendant, a Jewish defendant who's been summoned to civil court by a Jewish plaintiff, so the Jewish plaintiff had no right to bring him or her to civil court, but you certainly have the right to represent the person in that case, because there's no prohibition. You have the right to protect yourself from damage when the other person has summoned you, even though they shouldn't have summoned you. The Meir Auerbach wrote to the Sefer Imre Bina, says that just like you're not allowed to serve as a lawyer to represent somebody to go to a secular court if they're the plaintiff against another Jew, and just like you're not allowed to go as a party to secular court, you're also not allowed to testify on behalf of a plaintiff that decided to take another Jew to secular court, because that's also being misayeah, that's also assisting in an avera. Sometimes I get that question, that one party is bringing another party to one spouse brings another spouse to a civil court in a divorce case, and then they summon somebody to testify about the circumstances of the marriage, the relationship, and so forth. Say, am I obligated to go? I said, if the individual that went to secular court didn't get ahead to our coast, they didn't get permission to do so from a bezdin, so then you shouldn't testify. Then that would be a violation of halacha. If the secular court forces you to testify, it's a different story. But otherwise, it's not appropriate to testify under those circumstances. There's a question about what if you wanted to go to, or the other party wanted to go to the American Arbitration Association. Instead of going to a bezdin, they say, okay, I'll go to Pashranim. I won't go to a civil court, but I want to go and settle the matter in front of arbitrators instead. So is that going to be a violation of halacha? So here you have a tshuva by Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that if you have a certain industry, let's say the diamond industry, where there is a custom, it's customary that whenever they have disputes, they settle it in front of some sort of an industry arbitration board that decides cases according to industry practice, according to customs of industry practice. So Reuven says, I want to go to Bezdin. And Shimon says, no, I want to go to in front of the diamond industry arbitration board that's going to decide the case according to the customs and practices of diamond dealers. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, Shimon wins. He says, because there, that's the minhag hasochem. He says, that's the custom. The custom of the marketplace is that everybody goes in front of the arbitration board. Ah, what about Issur HaKos? So he said, it's not an Issur HaKos. It's not a prohibition or a cause because you're not going in front of the courts, number one. And number two, they're not deciding according to principles of secular law. They're just deciding according to the principles of the customs of the marketplace. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is quoted at the beginning of Siman Gimel and Choshen Mishpat by the Piskei Tshuva as well. They're both on the same page. You can look at the Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you can look at the Piskei Tshuva, they're side by side. Piskei Tshuva quotes Rabbi Akiva Eiger, but quotes him a little differently. But the way that Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes him, the way that the Piskei Tshuva quotes Rabbi Akiva Eiger is also correct. Piskei Tshuva says, let's say the case is not adjudicated by the arbitration board, but the case it comes to Bezdin. And the question is, what standard is the Bezdin supposed to apply when it's going to adjudicate the case? Should it apply strict Torah law? Should it apply the customs and practices of the diamond dealer industry or whatever other industry the Bezdin is, you know, dealing with, whether the case involves? So there as well, the Bezdin should follow the minhag hasochem. Hakol kaminhag medina. Also, you follow that the Gemara also says that if there's a practice of situmta, a certain practice of how kinyanim are made by certain merchants, so then it's considered to be a binding kinyan. You label barrels, you know, and put a marker, and then it's considered like the person has purchased the barrel. You shake on a deal, and it's considered like the transaction has been consummated through a handshake. Different ways of interpreting and applying situmta, so then that's a binding as well. And that's the standard of law that should be followed by the Bezdin. There's a very fascinating tshuva by the Tzitz Eliezer, by Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, in which he says that in Israel, they had a statute on the books, so with respect to condominium associations, where the statute said that if there is a dispute between the neighbors of a condominium association, so then there'll be a pakida, there'll be a certain person who will be appointed to adjudicate and resolve that dispute using principles of general fairness and equity. That's how all the disputes will be resolved. Is this considered to be valid according to halacha? So based on this tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the Tzitz Eliezer concludes that this is 100% valid because of the fact there is here not an adjudication in front of a secular court, but just in front of a pakid, in front of an appointed individual who is just making reasonable determinations for the sake of peace and harmony, using common sense principles and customary practice principles in order to resolve disputes among members of the condominium, and he's not subject to secular law in terms of how the determination is made. The big chiddush in the case of the Tzitz Eliezer is that even though it's actually something which is a product of the legal statutes, that it's a law on the books that you're supposed to have such an individual, he still held that it wasn't a violation of our codes. This is a question a little bit, because the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Samaches says that let's say you have Pshara B'Pnei HaOrkos, that you have an arbitration that is based on principles of compromise, but it's done as part of the court system. In other words, like small claims court. You go to the courthouse, and the courthouse has its regular court room on the top floor, which adjudicates cases according to statutes and the court precedent and the like. And then on the basement, you have the small claims court, where they just decide matters according to principles of common sense. So is that okay? Because you're appearing before somebody who's going to decide according to principles of common sense. So it's not Meirim Yad, but Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. So as the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, probably based on the other reason that going to secular courts is prohibited, Miyakir Shem Alilim, that this is still prohibited. It's still prohibited because it's part of the court system, because you have to go to the court building and it's part of the court protocol. The upper story, you go to the big cases, the basement, you go for the small cases, the arbitration, that are going to be decided according to principles of equity, but it's still part of the courthouse, it's part of the court system. So maybe the Tzitz Eliezer was makel because you're dealing with Jewish individuals. I don't know. That's a question. When they established the court system in Eretz Yisrael, so Professor Menachem Melon, who became the Tzitz Eliezer, is on page 38 of the materials, Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Tzadi Gimel. So Professor Menachem Melon, who is a big proponent, as you may recall, of the whole Mishpat Zivri system, so Professor Elon wanted to say that since you basically have Jewish judges, now probably some of the judges aren't Jewish either. He said since basically then you had only Jewish judges the people accepted upon themselves Jewish judges, so why shouldn't that be okay? It's like the Ramban writes. The Ramban says that we derive two prohibitions from the Pasuk of Be'elu Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem. Lifneihem, lo lifnei akum, don't go in front of the non-Jewish judges, and lifneihem, lo lifnei adyotos, don't go in front. When you have smuchin, you have certified judges who are well-trained and have a direct smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu, so don't adjudicate the case in front of simpletons. Don't have smicha. Don't adjudicate in front of adyotos. The Ramban says there's a difference between these two prohibitions. When it comes to lifneihem, lo lifnei akum, that's non-waivable because that's a ritual prohibition. When it comes to lifneihem, lo lifnei adyotos, says that's not a ritual prohibition, it's just that you're supposed to take advantage of the fact that the case can be heard, and technically speaking, according to the protocol of our monetary laws, El Choshen Mishpah laws, certain types of cases are supposed to go in front of smuchin. But if both parties waive that prerogative and they say we're going to go in front of hedyoto, so then that's going to be okay. So said Professor Elon, okay, so you have hedyotos, but what's so bad? They're still Jewish. So what's the problem? And he brought a raya from the Arkos Shebesuria, because the Meiri says, how did these common sense judges, when you had Arkos Shebesuria, you had these makeshift courts that were established in the jurisdictions where you didn't have fully qualified dayanim, how did they adjudicate cases? They adjudicated danin ba'omid datam v'chukim v'nimusim. They decided cases according to what was reasonable, and according to chukim and imusim, and according to some sort of legal system and protocols that existed wherever they lived. In other words, they were more familiar with the secular law practices. So they looked at the secular law books, which was written in a language that they could understand, and they would often decide cases on that basis. So said the Miri, so we have a secular court principles that we're establishing in the courts of Eretz Yisrael, based on Ottoman law, based on British law, based on every conceivable system other than Jewish law. And therefore, it's okay if we're going to decide according to those principles. Why is it worse than Arkos Shebesuria? So the obvious retort is that Avram Sherman writes about this as well. Also in the materials, the obvious, in an article that he wrote in Divrei Mishpat, I think, the obvious retort is that Arkos Shebesuria was when you didn't have qualified Dayanim. Baruch Hashem and Eretz Yisrael, we have many Dayanim who have learned Kosher Mishpah well, even when the Medina was established, who are qualified Dayanim. Number two, the Miri doesn't say it must be decided according to Chukam and Imusim. He says, Danim be'omid datam uve Chukam and Imusim. The judges, they can pick and choose. They want to decide according to common sense, they can decide according to common sense. They want to base themselves on something they read in a law book somewhere, they can base themselves on that, but they're not bound by that. I took a look to see what are the rules of the American Arbitration Association if parties want to accept upon themselves decide a case according to the American Arbitration Association. So I looked at their protocols, and it says there that according to their rules of how an arbitrator decides the case, says he may do justice as he sees fit, applying his own sense of law and equity to the facts as he finds them to be, and making an award reflecting the spirit rather than the letter of the agreement, etc. So it seems that based on their protocols, even the American Arbitration Association would be okay. That's what the Shach Paskins, the Aruch HaShulchan Paskins, that if even in front of a non-Jewish arbitrator, as long as he's not in the basement of the courthouse, not part of the secular court system, and as long as he's not bound to follow secular law, so then that would presumably be okay. So if you have a party who's not willing to go to Beis Din, but they are willing to go in front of the American Arbitration Association, so that certainly is much better in terms of avoiding an Isser or Kos. Is a Jewish party obligated to go in front of the American Arbitration Association if the other party refuses to go to Beis Din, but they think that they'll get a better judgment in accordance with halacha in the secular court than in front of the American Arbitration Association? So Rabbi Black says, okay, then it's not an obligation per se, but at least there would be no violation of our cause in front of something like an American Arbitration Association, as long as they weren't bound to follow secular law. So the problem here, says the Chazon Ish, with what was established in the Medina, is that they were bound to follow secular law. It says, V'abagad l'eke b'neim dayin sh'yodin al-pi mishpatei atom l'chok limonos ba'al v'sh'sekel al-pi musrei adam. He says, even in a case where you had our cause shibisuya, where they were obligated, where they needed to appoint judges who weren't so knowledgeable, they wouldn't be allowed to take upon themselves the laws of the other nations or to make up their own statutes. The shofet decides according to common sense, that's fine, that's pshara. It's not recognizable that the person is abandoning the Torah to dig wells that do not fit the Mayim Shel Torah. But if they agree on about a different legal system based on Ottoman law and British law and so forth, like they did in the Medina, so that's a Chilul Torah. So Chazon Ish felt that that was terrible. He was joined by Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, by Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who also decried what was being done with the creation of the Bagatz in Eretz Yisrael. And it says regarding this, this is a violation of placing the case in front of the hedyotos, in front of those who are not knowledgeable rather than smuchin. So you'll ask the question, didn't the Ramban say that you could do that if everybody agrees to it? So I think that this is why the Chazon Ish added a paragraph to address that kasha. It says, it doesn't matter if you'd used a Jewish person. It's worse. Says in this case where you're accepting a different foreign system, so basically what you're doing is you're rejecting the Torah. And even if everybody agrees with this, he says because what you have here is a haramas yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember, we gave two reasons for the prohibition of our coast. One is miyakir shem alilim. Okay, so here you're in front of Jews. But number two, the haramas yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. He says that if you're going in front of hedyotos, is going to result in being meir miyad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, because you're telling those hedyotos that they should follow a different legal system, or you're submitting to hedyotos who are duty-bound to follow a different legal system other than Torah. So therefore, that would be a haramas yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. In such a case, even the violation of lifneim lo lifnei hedyotos would be prohibited even upon the waiver or agreement of the parties because of the violation of meir miyad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, which raises the question, what if you have a particular contract where the party's choice of law is that they're going to go in front of the choice of forum is that they're going to go in front of the Beis Din, but their choice of law is that they want the Beis Din to follow secular law. So is that going to be a problem based upon this Chazon Ish? So some say, based on the Shuva Sarashba, Chelik Bav Simen Reish Nun Dalet, the Rashba says that, let's say the case there was a couple got married and the father of the wife gave a dowry, and then the wife died and there was a child who was born, the child died as well, and the custom in the place where this dowry was given was that if the wife dies and then a child dies at an infant age, that the dowry amount is given back to the father. So the father wanted the dowry back. And the husband said, nothing doing. I'm a Yorish. I inherit my wife, and therefore I get to keep this amount that you gave as the dowry. So they went to the Rashba. And the Rashba said that, oh, you look in the Yerushalmi and so forth, there was, you know, a practice in many places where a husband would waive his right to the wife's Yerusha and so forth, and especially under these circumstances where the wife died very soon after the beginning of the marriage and whatever. And he said, if that's the custom, so, you know, you would follow it if that was the custom based on the practices of the Torah community. But he says, if you're doing it in order to be mechakes a goyim, you're doing it in order to just supplant the Torah with principles of secular law, and you want to do that because you want to be like secular society and just follow whatever they do, so then that's completely prohibited. Some wanted to say, based on this Rashba, that if you have parties that accept upon themselves that they're going to follow secular law, so then even if they're adjudicating the case in front of Beis Din, this would be prohibited. Rezalman Nechemya Goldberg had a dispute about this with Zvi Gartner when it came to the prenuptial agreement in front of the Beis Din of America, because one of the things that Rezalman Nechemya recommended was that you put in the prenuptial agreement that the Beis Din will be authorized to decide the case in accordance with the principles of secular law, so that the women, the wives, would be more comfortable, that they wouldn't feel like they're going to lose everything if they go to Beis Din, because everything will be nichsei tzon barzel, whatever is nichsei tzon barzel. Okay, so they'll just get the original, you know, value, and they'll get back the nichsei miluk. But as far as whatever assets were acquired during marriage, they'll get nothing, because everything will go to the husband, and they'll get very scared. So say that you'll apply just the rules of secular law. So said Rav Zvi Gartner, this goes against the Rashba. So said Rav Zalman Nechemya, this doesn't go against the Rashba. The Rashba was talking about, you're going to uproot the entire system of Yerusha and say, we're just going to follow the laws of inheritance of the secular society. So then that would be a repudiation of the Torah. But otherwise, you're allowed to take upon yourself whatever monetary obligations you want. Who cares if it's happened, whatever is the customary monetary obligations that people take upon themselves happen to coincidentally be the same as secular law, that would not cause it to be prohibited. He said, maybe as a hider, you can say, rather than say that I'm going to follow secular law, and you can list, if secular law consists of 20 different provisions, just put those 20 provisions into the contract. The truth is, you look at the Rashba himself, the Rashba said that if this is a Tanai in a particular contract that the parties entered into between themselves, that's completely binding. It's only if the entire society takes upon themselves that they're going to follow secular law, lino kemeneshu mishpat hagoyim, asa shvisha mechakes hagoyim, that would be prohibited. But the Rashba said that if it's a b'davar shememamon tano kayim, if it's a condition and you're not repudiating Torah law, just the parties are determining that this is appropriate for themselves, so then this would be permissible. That's why the lashon that we currently have in the prenuptial agreement sort of reflects the fact that when the parties are taking upon themselves principles of equitable distribution law, for example, that they're only doing it not based on accepting a foreign court system, but they're doing it because they're following whatever happens to be general community custom. So the Lashon says the parties agree the Beis Din is authorized to decide all monetary disputes that may arise between them based upon equitable principles of equitable distribution law currently employed in the USA as found in the Uniform Marriage and Divorce Act. I'm sorry, that's what it used to say. Then we made it even better. Now we say the Beis Din can utilize principles of equitable distribution in accordance with customary practice as the Beis Din deems appropriate according to principles of Jewish law, equity, and local custom, making it clear that there's no abrogation of Jewish law, and to the extent that those principles would be utilized, it would be based upon local custom. So these are some of the different principles that have to be borne in mind whenever there is a dispute that needs to be adjudicated. Some of the parameters of the prohibition of our calls, so going in front of the secular law systems, the basis for when it is that we allow exceptions to the rule, and the parameters as well of how to appropriately enter into a contract where the Besdin, where the parties, based on principles of local custom, would like the Besdin to look at principles of secular law, which would be permissible as long as they're not abrogating a Torah system of law and simply replacing Torah, God forbid, the different system of law. And we pray that we'll be able to come to a kiyum of what we daven for every single day.
Thank you.
See ya. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are we in here or downstairs?